Yeah, but it was my birthday, and I had to. I got to have cheeseburgers.
That's what makes it a happy day. Your birthday and cheeseburgers.
Hell's yes. We got to go to the pie and burger, man.
Okay,
we'll get to it.
What kind of pie did you have?
I didn't actually have pie. Hey, you know what this is? This is a milestone. This is 65. We could retire.
Maybe we will. Maybe we should just end it here.
This is episode 65 of On Taking Pictures. We are here each and every week talking about photography and the art and science behind making images. My name is Jeffrey Sidoris from Faded and Blurred. With me, Mr. Bill Wadman.
Fancy.
Bill Wadman.
How you doing, Jeffrey?
I'm doing well.
You know,
I'm doing well.
I've decided, so instead of drinking soda, I've been drinking this soda stream water.
Right. Just the fizzy water, right?
Nothing in it? Yeah, yeah. Right. Well, okay, so...
Didn't you have, like, the grapefruit or something?
Well, I did have the grapefruit. The thing is that in many... I keep reading these articles that say that even the artificial sweeteners make your body do exactly what it does when it gets sugar. So while it doesn't have the calories, you still get the weird insulin ups and downs.
Even with, like, using sucralose or whatever
supposedly, yeah. It has your body reacts to it in a similar way. Maybe not quite as drastic as sugar, but it still, like, messes with your insulin and stuff. So anyway, I was thinking, you know, if I'm just going to do that, why don't I just put a little bit of something in there, like a fruit juice or something, you know, just like a splash of orange juice or whatever.
Sure.
So when I went to the store this morning, I just picked up one of those little tiny, you know, like 16-ounce things of Tropicana orange juice, but not the carton, not the pure premium, as it were. But
okay.
You know, like the cheap orange juice, you know
yep.
what I'm talking about?
Yep.
This tastes nothing like orange juice. Even though it's 100% orange juice from concentrate, it's the concentrate thing.
Like, do they call it orange drink?
No, it says 100% juice, 100% vitamin C. And, well, it says 100% juice. No, 100% pure orange juice from concentrate. But it's like when I put it in the fizzy water, I do not get Orangina. What I get is this weird nastiness.
Huh.
Anyway, it's kind of taken me down today. I was all excited to have some homemade Orangina, and I screwed up by buying the wrong orange juice.
See, that's what you get.
That's what you get you fall in love.
You've got ghetto orange juice now.
I do. Ghetto orange juice. Anyway, what do we got on the agenda for today? Big stuff? Little stuff?
Hey, but big stuff. But before that, I need to say thank you to everyone for all of your birthday wishes. I really appreciate it. It was a good weekend.
What exactly did you do?
Saturday... we went to the Pie and Burger, which is this landmark burger place in Pasadena, California. It's been there forever. My mom used to go there. She used to take me there as a little boy, and she used to go there as a little girl. Her mom took her, and the place has been there forever. They still make the soda, you know, like your Soda Stream.
Sure.
They you can get chocolate Coke, vanilla Coke, whatever, and they have just amazing burgers. And then they have really great pie, but I was too full from the burger, so I didn't have any pie.
That's just wrong.
Yeah. I mean, they cut their pie like in quarters. I mean,
so you get a big slice.
It's humongous. Yeah it's gigantic. Yeah. But it was really cool. These guys that were sitting, we sat at the counter, and these two fellows that were sitting next to us from North Carolina, so I had a nice conversation with them. And then we went to see Pacific Rim.
Ooh.
Which was fantastic, I got to tell you.
Now, what percentage of Pacific Rim do you think was actually shot with cameras versus completely in CGI?
Oh, probably 30% practical, 70% CG.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. But I will say it's some of the most seamless CG that I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, the scenes I've seen have been quite impressive.
Well done. I like the characters. It was just a fun movie. You know, they didn't sequel bait. It was just really a lot of fun. It was kind of nice to see a new IP out that wasn't just, you know, a rehash or a sequel of something else.
I hear it's not doing very well, though.
Know what? As sad as it is, Grown Ups 2 beat it at the box office, which
come on.
kind of an accurate reflection of America, but it was really kind of sad.
Grown-ups too.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't walk across the street to see that movie.
You know what the best part about that is?
What?
That's such an old man saying.
Is it really?
Oh, yeah. I think my grandfather would have said that that's an old man saying.
Or should I say, I wouldn't wheel across the street to see
it. Yeah, I wouldn't walker across the street.
Yeah, I wouldn't waste the tennis balls to... but yeah, Pacific Rim, really fantastic. I love Guillermo del Toro. Probably my favorite of his movies is one of his early films called The Devil's Backbone, which is a really fantastic movie.
I don't know that I ever saw that one, but I will put it on my list.
Really, really good. Creepy... Yeah, good stuff.
Well, you know what? Happy birthday, and I hope you really enjoy your 70s. It's I hear that it's the best decade of your life.
I'm to the point now where I just don't care. What do I have to prove?
Well, okay, so all of this birthday stuff though has caused a bit of introspection, no?
It's been going on for a while.
It's been bubbling.
It's been bubbling. Yeah, yeah. And I was listening to. I mean, I've been thinking about this stuff for a while, but I was listening to Brian Ferry a few days ago, a week ago or so. Brian Ferry, famously from Roxy Music, his new record is an instrumental record of his reinterpreting of 1920s jazz.
Right.
Of which he is a huge fan and from all accounts, very knowledgeable and has this sort of encyclopedic knowledge of 20s and 30s American music. And okay. It has always been fascinated with him. And it got me thinking about not only his career, but reinvention as a whole. Here's a guy who started out as a painter, formed Roxy Music with, Brian Eno and oh God, now I'm going to blank on the other guy's names. Anyway, did Roxy, embarked on a very successful solo career. And then sort of reinvented himself again as this other type of musician, kind of going back to the music that inspired him early on in his childhood. And it got me thinking about what we sometimes choose to do or what we are sometimes forced to do to reinvent ourselves.
Okay.
And I was thinking about school, college, and I was a quick story. I was in school for set and costume design and then there have been several chances for me to kind of change directions in the course of my life, and I won't go through them all, but one sort of seminal moment happened in college. My advisor in school was an incredible designer, up there with, in my book with Svoboda and Conklin and, just a fantastic set designer. And one of the things that he used to do is when he was trying to explain something to you, you're sitting across the table from him. He would draw out set designs so that you could see them, which meant that he was drawing them upside down.
Right.
And I used to just marvel at that. That he would do these beautiful costume renderings. Okay, see here, this is what you want to do. And he's drawing it upside down, and I'm, just amazed by that. So he's very talented, and I very much looked up to him. And but I was a very different person in college. I was a little full of myself in college. And it got to a point where I finally was able to assist him on a show. I was one of the assistant scenic designers for a show, and a series of events happened, and he ended up calling me into his office, and he said to turn in all of my materials, and I don't remember the entire speech that he gave me, but I do remember the following. He said, Mr. Sidoris, you have two things that I can't teach. You have style and you have flair. But you are such a self-absorbed asshole that nobody wants to work with you. And I was. I was, because that's who I was.
You know what? Having known you for only, I don't know what, 2 or 3 years?
Yeah.
I have a hard time seeing that.
Oh, but it's true.
Well, you know, I guess when you have like 70 years or so to change.
So, you know, at that point, I was arrogant enough not to see the lesson that he was trying to teach. And you know, basically it was this, you know, you're not going to design here ever. And it was me saying, well, you know, there are other departments, and stormed out all dramatically. And it, as it turns out, there weren't other departments. And it was this lesson in hubris that forced me to look at myself, that forced me to look at who I was and how I approached people, how I treated people, how I approached my work, how I valued my work, how the value that I put on my work determined the value that I put on myself. Sound familiar?
Sure.
How if you're not creating something at the top of your game, at the top of your ability, then you are not at the top of your ability. It's a direct reflection on who you are.
Yep.
So all of this has been swirling around in my head. And I was thinking, can we talk about Jesus for a second without it being?
Sure.
Without it being okay.
Hallelujah.
Yeah. think about something for a second. Think about let's take the religious implications. Let's take the God out of Jesus for a second.
Okay.
And just look at the man. Okay. Here's a guy who literally from the time he was born was told that he could do anything. That there was nothing beyond him. That there was nothing out of his reach. That you're it, man. There's nothing that's beyond you.
Okay.
And think about what that must do. Again, taking the Son of God part out, just what that must do to a human mind.
Sure.
To be told that you can't fail. There is no possibility of you failing.
Right.
And contrast that with how most of us grow up. The first word you hear is no.
Right.
And yeah. You continue to hear no. Don't do this. You can't do this. You'll hurt yourself. You'll fail. You'll do this. You'll do that. So it's all of this stuff has been swirling around in my head for, well, years really, but more intensely for the last several months. And when do you get to the point where it's time to reinvent? It's time to take a left turn. And sometimes life or the universe or God or Vishnu or Brahman or whatever you believe in, sometimes that throws you the curve and that forces you to turn left. But then there are other times when you just go, you know what? What I'm doing isn't working. And I need to turn left or right. I cannot keep going straight here.
But is it that it's not working because you feel like it's not working, or that you actually have evidence that it's not working?
Well, you could argue it either way. You know, I mean, I'm just saying
that there's also the thing we've talked about before, where it's just like you just got to stay on the road, and then you'll get there eventually.
But maybe you won't. You know, for example, let's take Fade and Blurred, for example. You know, this site has been up for 3 years. August will start the fourth year. And it's sort of plateaued. It's sort of plateaued in terms of readership, in terms of reach. Yes, it's increasing, but it's increasing very slowly.
Sure.
And I feel like I've done all that I know how to do. It's the best looking site that I can make it. It's, you know, now it comes down to, Are there content changes that need to be made? Are we not talking about gear enough? Are we not talking about technique enough?
Okay, this is a larger discussion, but let's take Faded and Blurred, right? So it could be that your design and your content is great and doesn't need to change. What needs to change is that you need to add, say, a bigger element of PR to get the word out about the site. You know what I mean? It could be that the work itself is great. It's just that people need to find it.
Maybe. But what it distills down to for me is that I'm not contributing the right material to the stream.
Okay.
That I'm somehow not on the right track. Whether I am or whether I'm not, I've lost objectivity about that part of my life, or I'm not as objective as I once was. You know, I see myself not contributing the right things. You know, maybe that's it. Maybe that's a way to look at it. And so I'm looking and going, okay, is it time for me to make a left turn? Is it that dramatic, or is it time for me to just more like a kaleidoscope where you twist it just a little bit and it's enough to change what you see? I don't know.
Hmm. Okay. You know, the you and I have talked before about the idea that you, even when you feel like a change is necessary, change might not come. And yet, at the same time, when you're not expecting change to come, it comes out of nowhere. And someone right. pushes you in another direction. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And this was the college thing. You know,
right.
that lesson in hubris led me to go be a prop master at Texas Shakespeare. It led me to go be a milliner and a property person in Alabama, and led me to New York. And, you know, I experienced a lot of amazing things as a result of that. And I think it put me on a path to not be that person that I was.
Right. I guess my thing is that you have the problem with life and the way that time works, because you can't see the future, you don't know what you're doing now will lead you to what later.
True.
It could be that this show leads you to something later. It could be that doing the website leads you to something later. It could be just the fact that you live in where you live, because mm-hmm. you're the guy who moves in next door, or the guy who comes into your bay to get a stereo installed, changes your life. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Which happened.
Right. Yeah. You know, if my father hadn't died, would I have given up advertising and done photography? I don't know.
Right.
Probably not.
At least not at that time.
No, right.
That was the catalyst for you to make that left turn.
So there's all kinds of stuff. Look, you know, I when I was growing up, I thought I was going to be a pianist.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was into computers and stuff. And I was pretty serious piano player. And when I was going to go to college, I was thinking of going to conservatory. And then I ended up going to engineering school for a while. And then I didn't like engineering school, so I went to music school, but not conservatory. I went up to Berkeley in Boston. And I got my degree and I finished. And I was like, wow, music industry is awful. I'm going to do some more of this computer stuff. And that sort of dropped me back into the computer thing, which led to advertising, which is what I ended up doing for 8 years or so.
Right.
You know, you don't know where things are going to go. You know, and that ended up having me here. If you had asked me when I was 18 years old what the likelihood was that I'd become a professional photographer living in New York City.
Yeah.
It wasn't even on the radar.
You know? Well, and there's this whole component of perception. You know, we're mentioning Brian Ferry earlier. You know, I'm assuming that this left turn into 20s era jazz was intentional on his part. But, you know, what you're saying is it could have been completely unintentional.
Yep. He could have been sitting at a bar having dinner with a friend one night, and another guy comes up to him and goes, "Hey, Joe, blah, blah, oh, here's my friend Brian. Oh, hey, Brian, hey, you ever think about doing some jazz stuff? I've been working on this, you know, it comes out of nowhere.
Right.
All kinds of stuff comes out of nowhere. You know, I mean, there's friends of mine are not very happy with their jobs, you know, and like looking desperately to find a way into something different. And I'm kind of like, you know what? Yes, there is, you know, you actively jumping into something else. And then there's the thing that you have no idea where it's going to come from that could push you in a new direction, you know?
Yeah. And that's the fence that I'm currently sitting on, is how do I know? And this is a direct question to you, Bill. How do I know whether it's time for me to initiate that reinvention, or do I trust that the universe has a better idea of where I need to be?
You don't know.
And this is what's wrecking me.
You know, I feel like in a lot of these things, and I mean, I question this kind of stuff all the time, right? You could make a case for anything mm-hmm. in life, you know. I can make a case that I really need to have a kid, you know.
Right.
Like, I can make a case for me never having a kid.
Right.
I can make a case for me moving to San Francisco and that changing my world. I can make a case for saying, you know what? The real growth is in Chinese cities. I should move to Shanghai and there I'll have a career.
Well, and that's the thing, right? Is we both of us are very similar in that respect, that we, you know, we could have been lawyers because we can talk ourselves into or out of anything.
Right. Law,
and make
terrible
an equally
thing to
strong,
do.
Yeah, make an equally strong case either way.
Yeah. And so I think in the same way, you know, you could convince yourself that what you're doing is great and just staying along this line and waiting for some other element of photographic arts, the stuff that you're interacting with all day long because of Faded and Blurred, could come out of nowhere something else. You know what I mean? That you talking to some photographer could enlighten you in some way or introduce you to somebody or give you an idea and away you go. And so what you just need to do is stick with F&B and just keep going.
Yeah.
And wait for that thing to happen. Like, you are kindling, you are ready, you just need the spark.
Right.
You
know? And maybe it's there. Maybe it's there waiting. I mean, I'd be lying if I didn't.
The problem with all this stuff, Jeffrey, is that it all involves faith. It involves faith that something's going to come in the direction you're going, or it involves faith that you know well enough that you know where you should be and how you should change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I should give up photography and go become a bricklayer because I just I feel it in my bones.
Right.
I know in a very abstract way, in a way that's unprovable, which is why I use the term faith.
Mm-hmm.
But and if it works out, I could sit there and say, oh, see, it's because I'm a genius. But if it doesn't work out, I can equally say, wow, I really screwed up. But either way, it doesn't prove anything. You know, there's no control group. That's
right.
The problem with all this stuff in life is that there is no control group in life. You know?
I mean, I guess at the moment, the big arc is, getting back to what I said before, is I don't feel like I'm adding to the creative stream.
Because I feel you're like not I'm making enough?
Maybe. Yes.
What? You know. Okay. But, and I don't mean this in any sort of weird way, making stuff has a whole other set of things that go with it.
Sure.
You know, seriously deciding, you know what, I'm going to make stuff and put it out there and stand by it and have it define me gives you all the problems that I have all the time.
Right.
You know?
But maybe that's not the bad thing. And
maybe not.
You know, it's, I don't know. I just don't, I know that there is something.
It's not the fix, I guess, is what I'm saying.
No. But I don't know. But
well,
I feel that there's something out there that I'm just not seeing.
Right.
That there is, you know, there are all of these sort of hints and signs and clues, and I'm somehow oblivious to each and every one of them. That's
right.
That's the way I've been feeling for the past several months. Is, you know, okay, here's where you really need to be here, and I'm, you know, miles away.
Yeah. I mean, I think that this reinvention thing, I mean, it comes down, there's self-initiated stuff where you're just like, you know what, tomorrow I'm starting a new thing. I'm going to go start working out or taking a picture a day or whatever it is.
Right.
There's the situations where you get pushed by somebody, you mm-hmm. know, that guy who said, hey, you should come work at my company. You didn't call him back. He called you back a second time.
Yes.
He didn't have to.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
That guy's decision to call you back changed your life.
Yeah. I was doing, for listeners, I was doing stereo installs, and I was installing a stereo in a guy's station wagon. It was his wife's station wagon, like a Mercedes station wagon.
Just
thing.
A head and unit, or like amps and speakers too?
Everything. Built a speaker box, and it was actually pretty nice system. Anyway, he you know, long story short, he said, hey, you know, what do you really want to do? Because this can't be it. You know, we had been talking throughout the course of the day, and he said, you should come by and see where I work. I think you'd like it. It ended up he was the head of a post-production company in LA, and I went down and took a tour. A couple weeks went by, and he called me and said, hey, you want to come down? And I said, yes. So I came down, and he offered me a job right then and there. And yes, it was only an assistant, you know, it was a production assistant at a post house. But what I was exposed to completely changed my direction. And it was another one of those moments where you're going in one direction and out of nowhere. And I wasn't looking for a new direction at that point.
Right.
And out of nowhere, this nudge in a new direction came.
Well, you know, in some ways that's what in LA they call a break.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've been lucky enough to have several of them. And right. If I look back on them, most of them were unexpected. I mean, even the thing in college, I had no idea what an insufferable prick I was.
Yeah.
You know, I was completely oblivious to it. And
if that guy hadn't spanked you, you think you would have stayed that way?
Yes. And I had the chance to thank him for it years later. And I said, I know what you did. I know what you had to do. And at the time I couldn't see it. And I thank you so much for doing what you did.
Hmm.
Yeah, because it changed who I was. You know, you can't, I mean, I gotta suppose you could stay like that, but yeah. I couldn't stay like that.
I mean, there's also another element of this, which is the idea of there's a time to up your game.
Right.
That there's a decision that you have to make that I want better clients, and to get better clients, I need to charge more.
Right.
You know, and yeah.
I'm playing at 60%, and I need to be playing at 90%.
I'm playing in the minor leagues, and if I want to play in the major leagues, I have to just have to go put the uniform on and say that I want $2 million a year.
Right.
You know.
See, these are the things that I'm wrestling with.
Oh, it's – look, recently, and I'm not going to go into too much detail, but I was asked to submit a proposal for a commission, and if it works out, it could be a very good opportunity for me. It's in a sort of it's at a level that I know I can work at, but I haven't had the opportunity to work at.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I've been talking to a lot of people about the details and sort of the mental processes that go in, because you know, I was talking to a listener of the show one night. It was a friend of mine. And I said, you know, I'm adding up these costs, and these costs are going in order of magnitude more than I would ever, you know, actually estimate and give to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And she was just like, why would you ever have a problem with that? You know, I mean, if this is what it costs, this is what it costs. I said, because I don't deserve that. I don't deserve X amount of money to do something that I would do for free if I had the chance. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like that's not, this is crazy. Who the hell am I to, you know, be playing in that league? And she said, man, you got imposter syndrome. And I was like, what's that?
Yeah,
and
I go look it up. I had never heard of this since until you told me.
I go look it up, and it's exactly how I feel almost all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a really great Wikipedia article. It says,
hit me.
It's a psychological phenomenon in which people are unable to internalize their accomplishments. Mm-hmm. Despite external evidence of their competence, those with the syndrome remain convinced that they are frauds and do not deserve the success they have achieved. Proof of success is dismissed as luck, timing, or as the result of deceiving others into thinking they are more intelligent and competent than they themselves believe themselves to be. And that's entirely how I feel. I mean, even though my work is at a certain level, I think that, oh, I was just lucky to get that shot.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know what I mean? Like, that I was in the right place at the right time to get that gig or whatever it is. But that's exactly how everything works in life, you know? So I feel like a little bit of a crazy person, right? So anyway, I was talking about this the other day with, I had a magazine shoot. And we were waiting for the subject to, you know, get makeup and all the rest of it. And I was sitting talking to the editor, and I've been friends with her for years. And I was talking to her a little bit about this, and she's just like, no. She's just like, you need to – she's like, there's a point at which you have to decide to up your game.
Mm-hmm.
You have to demand to be at the next level, because until you do, you never will. You know? If you go in and say, oh, please – Yankees, hire me to play first base because I'd really love to play for the Yankees, and no.
Right.
You know, you have to be just like, you need to hire me because you guys really need a good first baseman, yeah. And I'm the guy for you. And then people go, you know, oh, man, yeah, Wadman's the guy, even though I can't throw a baseball.
You've been wrestling with, you know, do I need to go medium format? Do I need to go bigger? And there is a point where some of that stuff is valid.
Well, they're valid questions, sure, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, like,
yeah.
if this thing happens, you know, I am going to shoot at medium format, but I'm just going to rent. Cuz yeah, I mean, but, what I want to do, I want to build I currently, except for your occasional, you know, commercial shoot where there's money, a lot of money involved, I'm not going to spend $800 renting a camera for the day.
Right.
You know, the budget's not there. Where with this, okay, let's do it. Let's get a, you know.
But you do what you have to do to get there, is, I guess.
Yeah.
The-
yeah. But I mean, but the idea, the step it took, the mental leap that it took for me to write out this budget,
mm-hmm.
and submit it,
mm-hmm.
and stand by it. Even though some people say it was too much. Some other people say it was way too little, you know?
Well, it kind of goes back to last week of Goldilocks camera.
Yeah.
You know, now it's the Goldilocks proposal system. I mean, nobody really knows until it crosses the desk of the person who needs to see it. And they go, you know what? This is just right.
Exactly.
Let's go with this.
And I'm making an educated guess about, you know, I'm certainly not gouging the people. You know, when I break it down to the amount of hours I'm going to work on this, I'm not making that much money, you know, if it actually works out. It's not like I'm getting $2,000 an hour.
Right.
You know, so there's this, but it's, you know, and I was sort of yesterday, I was going to submit this, send this thing in. And somebody was just like, oh, let me take one more look at it. I was like, no. It's done.
Yeah.
It's
to ship it.
It's going out. It has to ship. I can't sit here and spin my brain over and over again on the same thing that I've been worrying about for a month now.
Right.
I just can't do it.
This is a great example of the opportunity for this came out of nowhere.
Yes.
And if you get the opportunity to do it, then that does, in a sense, reinvent you. It puts you in a different.
Yes, this could jump me up to that next level. Yeah,
right.
And allow me to make similar connections on similar things and get more work like this. And the imposter syndrome, the imposter in me,
mm-hmm.
would say, "See, it's all just that I'm lucky." You see?
Well, there's
but this is exactly what would happen to Warhol and whoever else, right? Like everyone who's ever been successful wasn't successful, and then they got a break, and people liked the work, and they became successful. Like that's how it happens. So if this is my break, or the next one is my break, or I've already had my break, you know.
And to your point, you never know A, where it's going to come from.
No.
And B, you know, there's this idea of what would you, you know, if you could go back and change one thing about your life, what would you change? And I most often say nothing, because I don't know how the ripple effect would affect anything else.
Right. Right. And, you know, for me, I've had this consternation that all of you have had to listen to for the last 20 weeks. And a big part of it is, I mean, I'm doing work and whatever it is, but I'm not going anywhere. Like, I feel like I'm on a treadmill and I'm in second gear or third gear.
Right. Right.
And it's like, I can't stay here.
Right.
So
yeah, I'm in the same spot.
Either I stop the car and I get out and I start walking or run or something else, or somebody lets me get into the passing lane because I'm driving me crazy sitting here.
Right.
It's either I get out altogether, or I move ahead in where I am, and getting the brakes to move ahead are sometimes rare, you know.
I got a call the other day from a friend of mine who I've known for a while, and it's kind of funny how we, when I first started learning 3D, I bought a book on 3D, and on the back flap of the book was a floppy disk with a package called Imagine on it. And this DOS-based 3D program. And it was interesting, and I loved the idea of 3D, but I'd never – it's a completely different way of thinking than 2D.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of questions that I couldn't figure out. And I thought, you know, I'm going to call the company.
Were they pretty basic questions in hindsight?
Yes. Yes, very. And I called the company and I said, hey, you know, I have this book and it came with this software, and I had a couple questions. Is there somebody that I can talk to about it? And the guy on the other end of the phone said, yeah, me. And I said, okay. So I asked a few questions and got the answers that I was looking for, and away I went. And, you know, weeks went by and I had more questions, or maybe it was only days. And I called back and got the same guy on the phone, and we ended up talking, and he helped me through things. And it turns out it was Mike Halverson, who was the head of Impulse, chief software architect, CEO. And we've been friends ever since. But that was another – his sort of advice and help sort of took me off in another direction. And I started learning 3D, and I moved on to I had a friend that was able to get educational copies of different software packages for me to learn.
Right.
Including a little package called 3D Studio.
Wait, 3D...
3D...
Studio. Don't we know somebody? Okay,
this was like R4, the DOS version, right?
I can just see Gary smiling right now.
Yeah. So indirectly, Gary, thank you. So I learned it, and by the time I learned it and was competent at it, I've been hired to do several 3D jobs over the years. But I get a call from Mike saying, hey, I want to send you a 3D printer. And I was like, okay, what do you got going? Well, he's putting together a new project with 3D printing and this new company, and they want fresh ideas and they want fresh insight. And it's interesting to me that here's somebody I've known for, you know, I don't know, 15 years, 16, 17 years. And out of the blue, this other opportunity presents itself.
Right. Well, that gets into the whole networking thing too.
Yeah.
The more people you know, the more opportunities can come out of things, you know?
Yeah. And I don't know where it's going to go, but it never would have been there had I not, you know, been fortunate enough to pick up that book and then pick up the phone and then you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So yeah, you don't know where it's going to come from. Nope. And there have been enough of these things that have happened in my life that I'm actively looking for the next one. And maybe that's what's tripping me up.
It's kind of, you know what it's kind of like? It's kind of like looking for a girlfriend.
Yeah.
You know, when you're single and you're like, oh, I really want to date somebody.
Yeah. Never happens.
Never happens. It's always when you're single and you're like, ah, I don't know. And then suddenly you bump into a friend of a friend.
Yeah. Yeah. You're at the laundromat or something. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like if you're looking for it, it's not going to happen.
And maybe that's the thing. Maybe my frustration is in and of itself not allowing me to move forward.
Maybe. You know, I think, you know, my sister, you know, and a number of people I know, myself included, you know, you go through like depression cycles and that kind of stuff.
Right.
And, you know, sometimes you see people who are more successful than you and there's envy there and all that kind of stuff, you know. And then there's this theory that, you know what, if I'm just happy for everybody else and their success, eventually that'll come back around to me. You know, like other people in my life doing well is only good for me in the long run, you know?
Yeah, it's good on like paper.
Being envious doesn't do me any good.
Right, 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 right.
So I might as well be supportive and happy.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, you don't know where anything's going to come from.
I don't. And you know, it was funny. You said the other day, maybe it was even yesterday, when we were kind of talking pre-show. And you were like, man, you know, you know what you need to do is just take more pictures.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you're not putting up nearly enough. And no. You're right. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe that's the thing. I mean, I've got this stuff. I've got, you know, soft lighters and flashes and all this kind of stuff.
At least a couple a day, you know.
Yeah. And maybe that's the thing is in doing the work, the opportunity presents itself.
Well, you know, like for example, like you live in a big sort of complex of apartments.
Yes.
Okay. You know, put out a thing at the mailboxes and say, look, I want to do a portrait series of everyone in the place.
You know what? We've talked about this. I want to call it the Sycamore Sessions because right. That's the name of the place I live.
How hard, you know, what's stopping you from doing that?
Me.
Right. Okay. Well then, you know, open a Word document, type something up, print it out, and stick it up. You know, like it's taking that first step, just doing it, just do it.
Mm-hmm.
When I was doing that Norman Rockwell, knockoff telephone thing.
With the multiple portrait. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Which was, by the way, a huge time suck. Anyway, one of the guys who came over and was wearing what's called a chamois shirt, apparently up in Vermont. You know, sort of like this.
Say that again?
It's called like a chamois shirt. It's made of like this, I don't know, I think it's like fake wool or something. Like one of these button-up shirts that's a little thicker. Huh. Apparently it's a thing like in northern New England because it's cold and whatever.
Chamois shirt.
Yeah, it's a thing. Apparently. I don't know. Somebody else call in. He was sitting there and he was trying to get his Vermont on. He lives down here, but he was trying to like get all Vermont, you know. And he said he quoted his like uncle or grandfather. He used to say, "The only thing between thinking it and getting it done is doing it."
Nice.
And whenever Heather and I like, Heather's like, "I don't want to like clean the house," right? I'm like, "Heather, the only thing between thinking it and getting it done is doing it."
Nice.
And it's true, right? I mean, it's so simple, and it's, you know, it's Nike, just do it, and it's whatever. But it's true. It's just like, just don't think about it. It's not an option not doing it is not an option.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So yeah, you know, if you want to do portraits, put up a thing. You got people. You got Nikki and B, you know?
Yeah.
I'm sure, you know, make B sit for you every day for 2 months, you know, and try different things every single day. You know, whatever. you know, hey, it's punishment, you know, like, you know,
yeah.
Right. You know, walk around your complex or go for a walk in those woods and post at least one, maybe two pictures per day on your blog, you know, and have it be, there is no option not to do it. When I was doing 365 portraits and my weekly thing before that, and my daily thing before that, the original 365 stuff, it's like, it got to the point where it was like eating dinner, you know, it was like eating each day. It's like, I can't not eat today.
Mm-hmm.
This has to get done. And what comes out of dropping the sheer amount of wasted time that happens with all the negative thoughts and procrastination, even if the output isn't amazing, it's already better than nothing.
Right.
And nothing is the enemy. You know?
Yeah.
Doing nothing is the enemy.
Yeah. And yeah, that's exactly it. I you know, I'm a victim of that a lot.
Right.
You know, I think myself in, and you do the same thing. We think ourselves into doing nothing.
Right. Think too much.
There is a paralysis that happens when you fear starting and failing, and you fear not doing anything. So you,
Or you fear doing the wrong thing, so you don't do anything at all.
Yeah, that's more accurate.
Right. And, you know, is there a situation at which, you know, doing nothing is better than doing something? I'm sure there are like a few spotty examples of that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I got mugged walking down to the store yesterday, maybe if I didn't walk to the store, I wouldn't have gotten mugged. But like, what are the odds of getting mugged on the way to the store? You know,
right.
Like,
right.
You know, so every once in a while, sure, bad things will happen from the fact that you're doing stuff all the time. But I will tell you that the 3 years when I was doing those things every day were by far the most productive years of my life.
Right. You know? No, you're right. And I mean, it's, I think that I have always been, what I really enjoy doing has often been a byproduct of simply doing something else. Right. So if I'm not doing anything, then I'm taking out a major component of what needs to be there.
Right. You are like me. If you stop moving, that's when bad things start happening.
Yes.
Being busy is good.
Yes.
Right.
Being so busy you can't see is better. I operate on a much better level. My work is consistently better the more pies I have my fingers in.
Right. Okay. So why is it that when nothing's going on, you fill your time with anxiety and overthinking?
Is
the overthinking itself an act that keeps you busy?
Lately, yes.
Right. So that's messed up. Look, if you want a running buddy, I'll do it. Picture a day. Let's do it. You know, everyone in the Google Plus group, let's go. Picture a day for the next month, the next 2 months. I'll post them in there. You know.
Yeah.
You want competition?
Yeah.
We can make it. You know. We have an
maybe
audience.
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe that's the thing.
Because I'm sure there's people listening who feel the same way.
I hope so. otherwise, I sound crazy.
All right, let's do it. Okay, starting today, picture a day.
A person? Or is it just a picture?
A photograph that you...
An intentional photograph.
An intentional photograph that you feel good about, at least, every day. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like something that's like a deliberate, like, okay, I took time and took this photo, not like do walking down the street, snap, 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 snap. But like, you know, okay, I'm going to go take this picture for 5 minutes.
Yeah. I'm not just going to do 31 sequential photographs of a foot of asphalt.
Right. Yeah.
Although that would be.
Yeah. You know, it's funny.
Wait a minute.
I just have to digress for a second because I was up at the diner yesterday and Nick, the guy who runs the diner. Who's in that diner picture with Heather and Claude.
Okay, sure.
The guy behind the counter runs.
He's behind the counter, yeah, sure.
Claude, or Nick is one of those people who, he's just funny. Like, we were talking about something about art, and he's just like, well, what is art? Like, I could take a picture of this ketchup bottle and then take it, like, when it's half full and then, like, quarter full and then when it's empty. Is that art? And I was like, Nick, that's actually a pretty good idea.
Yeah.
He's like, what the heck, man? Like, yeah. And it just got me thinking. So when you said the foot of asphalt, I was just like, it's pretty good. Yeah. But you know what I'm saying.
I'm going to do a macro Google Street View.
Right.
Look,
yesterday I went to pick up I won an auction for a print at SVA a couple weeks ago. They had a silent auction that I went to. And I bid on a bunch of stuff, and I really didn't expect to win any of them, and I ended up winning one of them. So, whoopee for me, money out of my pocket. But,
yay, you won.
Yay, I
now
won.
Cut us a check.
The chance to buy something. And anyway, I went and picked up the print yesterday, and on the way out, around the corner from Trader Joe's. They have Trader Joe's out west?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Outside of Trader Joe's, they had like one of those giant bundles of corrugated cardboard, you know, when they like throw out all their boxes and they like bundle them into a thing. And I just took a picture on my phone because I didn't have my camera with me, but it looked pretty cool. And I just put it up on Twitter a few minutes ago and said, hey, Gursky, I'm coming for you, you know.
Nice.
Because it, you know, it kind of has that sort of look, right?
Right.
And it's interesting to me because, you know, I actually like this picture. Like if I had a really high res version of it, it would be really cool to print that giant and have it on your wall.
Right.
You know, like I would consider putting this on my wall, you know? And it kind of made me think maybe that's a good series for me.
You know, why not
bring my camera out with a little step stool so I can get above these things.
Yeah.
And take the picture for real, you know?
Hey, by the way,
yeah.
Speculoos cookie butter at Trader Joe's.
Yeah. It's good.
Okay.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll go. They also have that really good trail mix with peanut butter cups in it.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's the same thing.
And I get that when we're on vacation. It has like dried cherries and peanut butter cups in it.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, hey, let's do it. I'm all in. What do you think?
I am game.
Okay.
Are there restrictions? Is it real camera? Is it iPhone? Is it not that the iPhone's not a real camera? Don't jump on me about that, for crying out loud.
I would prefer you to use your Fuji because I want you using your Fuji more.
Okay. Hey, by the by, Fuji users, X Pro and XE1 users, new firmware today, version 3.0, adds focus peaking for manual focus, and the autofocus seems a bit snappier.
Yeah, but only focus peaking if you're using the stupid electronic viewfinder. I really want one. I really do. I want to like it, but I just
wait. Is it only?
Well, how can they do it on the? Could they do it on the optical?
You know what? I haven't tried that. I'll look because they do overlays in the optical. They do right lines for.
All right. Well, if they can do that, then I'll be impressed. But if it's just the EVF,
I will look.
Okay.
When does that come out? I grabbed it. It's out now. I grabbed it last night.
Okay.
Well, no, this morning. So after midnight.
All right. I think we should talk about a sponsor.
A sponsor?
Yeah.
You know, I wish that there was a place.
Yeah.
Bill, I wish that there was a place that you could just go and look up photos, videos, or vectors. Why is this brain surgery? Why is there not a place like this?
Jeffrey, there is a place like this.
What?
Yep. It's called Shutterstock.com. There's over 20 million stock photos, vectors, illustrations, and video clips. Look, you start your search at Shutterstock.com, you find that perfect image for your website, ad, publication, or other creative project. These people, I mean, you guys know about these people, right?
You know what? Hold on. I'm going to, in honor of, well, me, I'm going to look up birthday cake.
Okay. While you look that up, I'm going to read some more of the...
58,000 results.
Yes. Yeah.
That's a lot of birthday cake.
Yeah. I bet you could even find one with like your actual age on there. Shutterstock gives you global image collection, to find images from across the world. They have images from everywhere. You know? I'm sure you could look up, you know, Russian birthday cake and there's something that'll come up.
All right.
Let's test it.
Smart guy. Russian birthday cake. Do they even have birthdays in Russia?
I don't know. We're going to find out.
Oh, wow, there are. Wow, look at that.
Did you know that like 100 years ago, people didn't really celebrate birthdays the way we do now?
Really?
Yeah.
What did they do?
It just wasn't a thing. Huh. Anyway, you could choose between these image packs where you just need an image or two. They got monthly subscriptions. Choose whichever fits your needs. You never have to compromise. If you need just one image for your blog or mock-up, they can do that. You know, every time you visit Shutterstock, there's something new because they had 10,000 new images a day, and it's more affordable than you think. No extra prices for large files. Just download any image at any size, and you pay only one price.
You know what I like too are these videos.
Oh, the videos are great.
I've been watching this show Suits. Have you seen this show?
No.
It's on Netflix. Anyway, they do a lot of these flyover shots of New York, like where you're looking straight down on the skyscrapers.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
I bet you they get their footage from Shutterstock.
There are a lot of New York, like cityscape types of things.
Sure.
And I mean, come on, what are you going to do? You're going to go rent a helicopter for $50,000? No.
No.
Who wants that?
No. No one does that. No one we know would ever rent a helicopter to do some aerial shots.
Yeah, no.
Right.
And you're going to be like, Jeffrey, I can just use a drone. No, you can't. No, you cannot. You're not going to fly a drone. Who are you kidding?
Yeah.
So you're going to go to Shutterstock and you're going to pay, you know, a couple $100 and you're going to get this HD clip that's better than anything you would have shot anyway.
Yeah.
And then you're going to be done.
Look, you can, and I love these light boxes, right? You can curate and share these pictures and stuff via light box. So you choose the favorite pictures and videos, you add them to a light box gallery as you search, and there's an iPad app for that, and you can send them to other people. You know, you can collect these things. They even have advanced, enhanced license access, right? So if you need to print something, you know, like the sweat, you're gonna put it on an OTP T-shirt for a trade show. We need to go to a trade show so we can get a T-shirt made with graphics from Shutterstock.
Yeah,
we gotta start getting invited to do some speaking gigs.
Isn't there like a what is that one, the big one that's in Brooklyn? Isn't there a big photo thing in Brooklyn?
Maybe. I don't know. It's probably in Williamsburg, in which case I'm not invited.
You know, we should do you know, we talked to Randy Duchesne about maybe doing something.
Yeah.
About maybe a like a photo panel type thing.
See, that's what we got to do. And then we'll get some swag made with a picture from Shutterstock.
Yeah.
Let's see. If you need help, they got a dedicated account rep for you. 24 hours support during the week. They'll get back to you.
That's pretty awesome, actually.
So you sign up for a free browse account. Go to Shutterstock.com. You don't need a credit card. When you find the images you need, you want to purchase, use the purchase code PICTURES7, as in the month of July. Picture 7, you get 30% off any package. And Shutterstock.com, we thank them very much for their support. Yeah, it's pretty good. All right, what
Man,
else?
Is I love these flyover shots. I'm like just sitting here looking. These
you need
so
a projector
cool.
Like I've got.
I know.
You know, I ordered the remote, the controller.
And, oh, did you?
And a 15-foot USB extension cable so I can like sit on my bed and play.
Fantastic.
I think it'll be cool.
Now I
have to find a copy of Windows. I used to own a copy of Windows. Got to look into that. We'll talk later.
Don't just stay with Windows 7.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Hey, so this weekend,
Wait, you mean this past weekend? You mean this past weekend that was my birthday? That weekend?
Was it your birthday this weekend? I didn't know that. Happy birthday.
Hey, a friend of mine, you know, he got me some tennis balls.
For real?
I swear.
I like this guy. Can we become friends with this guy?
Yeah, yeah. And then Carl Taylor sends me an email and says, "Happy birthday, you old git."
Nice.
Yeah, thanks, Carl.
It's good to be Carl Taylor.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny. I laughed.
So... This weekend, Heather and I had her cousin came into town, her cousin Gifford, who's a super nice kid, kid guy. He's like 20.
Yeah, I like that photo you put up, by the way.
He's like 20. He's like 21. Does that mean he's a kid or a guy?
I don't know.
Okay. Anyway, I asked him to come in because he's an actor, and I asked him to come act in one of my little movies, which we filmed the other day, which I'm going to work on later this afternoon when I get my new video card to actually do the stuff in Premiere that I want to do. But so he comes down, and we met up and went to MoMA, because last week Heather surprised me with a membership to MoMA.
Nice.
Which is like, it's like,
can I just ask you a question?
Sure.
Who's fancy?
That would be me. So MoMA is like $25 a ticket. It's ridiculous. It's expensive. So the two of us to go is $50. So apparently it's $140 a year to be members. So if we go three times a year, which we do, we're saving money, and we get invited to like free movie nights and free member only previews to shows.
Nice.
And like shorter lines. We don't have to wait in line. We just like go in. Huh. And we get $5 tickets for anybody we go with us, up to five people. So it works out in the end, right? Because there's people we know who don't have the $25 to go to MoMA, you know, because it's expensive. And now they can probably go with us, you know.
How is it that MoMA is $25, but the Met is free?
Well, the Met is $25 requested, right?
Ah, okay, okay.
But you know, it's suggested donation.
But MoMA enforces it?
Yes. MoMA, you can't get it. There's a free night on Friday nights after 4. You can go, but there's like a line around the block.
Mm.
Yeah. It bothers me a little, but I won't get into that. Anyway, so we go to MoMA because I wanted to see the Bill Brandt exhibit that we've been talking about
right.
a little bit, which was excellent, by the way, which was huge. It was a lot of pictures. It was probably, I don't know, 150 pictures.
Wow.
Yeah. It was pretty substantial. Mostly smaller prints, right? You know, which just goes to show you, too. It's like, we need these cameras to make these big prints. Most of the time when you go see photography, unless you're going to see Gursky or Crudson, you're seeing 11 by 14 prints or smaller. You know, a lot of times you're going to see the little prints, you know,
right.
or 16 by 20. You know, you're not seeing enormous prints. So we go there. We saw that, which was really cool. They had holes, another exhibit of recent acquisitions, and they had all this like nice Stephen Shore prints, these like famous Stephen Shore stuff.
Mm.
Which was really good. And then upstairs, they had just opened a 50th anniversary version of the Walker Evans American Photos thing.
Love it. Love it.
Yeah. Which includes, you know, that studio shot that I love with all those pictures.
Yeah, with all the pictures in the window.
Right. So they had all of them up in this room upstairs. And
was there any info on that particular photograph? Because I know you and I have talked about that before. Like, who owns it? Where is it?
No, there was not. In fact, there were no labels on the individual photographs. There were numbers, and then there was like a laminated placard that you could pick up and walk around with. And
okay, like a legend type thing.
Yeah,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. But what I found interesting about this, and this is kind of what I wanted to talk about, was it was cool seeing them there, right? But I have the book, and the prints weren't that much bigger than are in the book, right? I mean, they were, you know, little prints.
Right.
And so I pick up the legend because I was like, is this a new thing? And it said, no, this is the 50th anniversary, and these are the original prints that were at MoMA that made Walker, like this set of images into this set of images.
Wow.
Like these are the original prints that made Walker Evans American Photographs into what it is.
Huh. That's kind of cool.
Well, it is. Okay, so that's what I wanted to bring up. Does it matter? Why does it matter?
Does what matter?
Does it matter that these are the original prints?
That he had a hand in printing?
Let's say he did. Let's say he didn't have a hand in printing. Like he was, you know, he just approved them and signed them. Does that make a difference?
I think it's better than an offset print, but it's not as good as him being in the dark room printing them.
Okay.
There's something about by their own hand that, for me, makes it more of an object.
Well, you know, I had this discussion the other day during dinner, during a birthday dinner.
Wait, what?
It was somebody else's birthday, actually. Because I've never actually met you before. And I wouldn't recognize you if I walked by you on the street. Well, maybe if you, like, had orange-colored tennis balls on your walker. Anyway, so I was having this discussion with another guy because I was saying we were talking about the woman who burned those paintings that her son stole in order to keep the evidence.
Right, right, right.
Hide the evidence.
Picasso's, is that what they were?
Yeah, there was a Picasso and a few other things. We're gonna put this link in the show notes. It was on this website called Quartz, which is actually a really pretty website, by the way. I don't know if you noticed how pretty that website was. It was Picasso's Harlequin head and a few other things. And the investigators determined that the evidence collected in the oven, such as certain pigment residues and pre-industrial copper nails and tacks, suggested that this woman destroyed at least some of the turn of the century paintings.
Can we just the evidence collected in the oven?
Yeah, right. 5 paintings and 2 drawings: Picasso, Monet, Gauguin, Matisse.
Wow.
Meyer de Haan and Lucien.
Wait, her son stole these?
Yes, apparently.
Huh.
Which is just awful, right?
Yeah.
And so there was an article on this Quartz, and it's called "Why You Shouldn't Care That a Picasso Was Destroyed." And his basic contention is, don't worry, this wasn't an important Picasso. You know, this wasn't the 4 women or 5 women or whatever it is. You know, it wasn't the, what's that one in about the Spanish Civil War, you know,
right.
It wasn't that. So therefore, you know what? There probably are super high res images of it now on the internet. And so few people go to see the originals of any of these things anyway, that if it got destroyed, it's not really destroyed because we have pictures of it. So don't worry about it. That's the guy's basic.
But that's like, okay. So because Gates had, you know, Da Vinci's codex and scanned it, we should not care if the original gets destroyed. That's silly.
Right. I tend to agree with you, right? It's not. And he says,
there are lots of pictures of the Declaration of Independence. Let's just use it for kin. I mean, no.
Right. Dumb. And you know, the argument that he makes is that, you know, people say it's a crime against humanity. Well, you know, it's not like he went and killed a town full of people. That's actually a crime against humanity. Right. The rest of this is, you know, who are you kidding? And the thing is that that's a straw man that he's setting up. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
It's not like this woman burned, you know, felt paintings of dogs playing cards. You know, this is, these are works of art that were.
I love those paintings.
Yeah. But you know what? If we lost one of those, the world would not be less well off. Right?
Now, a black velvet Elvis, that's a different story.
Right. Well, I used to have one in the thing. Anyway, so it got me thinking about the fact that, so Joe, who I was talking to, is an actor.
Okay.
And his big thing is that he likes going to see movies in communal places to have that shared experience, that seeing theater is a shared experience.
Sure.
And that it exists within time. And if you are not there at that place at that time, you're not going to experience it. And there's something magical in that. The other end of the spectrum.
Would he argue that viewing art solo versus viewing art in a gathering is more powerful or less powerful?
I think that he sees art in groups is better, but especially like performance art.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So the thing that I said, okay, well, at the other end of the spectrum is the guy who toils away with a big giant chunk of marble and comes out with David, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where the performance really is built into the final product.
Right.
Okay. With photography, in some ways, you're somewhere between those two things. Because there is a final result, something that you could take away from it, right? But you could also say that there is the element of time, because time is being captured. Shutter speed is all about capturing a moment in time and recording it, right?
Right.
So
right.
Photography is somewhere between those two realms, you know? And it got me thinking about the fact that these Walker Evans photographs, is it that they're photographs or is that they are artifacts that makes me like them? that makes me revere them in a way that I maybe would not have if they were modern prints.
So it's not. Okay.
Like, am I revering the photograph, or am I revering the fact that it's the original that's there? I mean, two weeks ago, you know, when I went to that, the Met had the Civil War.
Right.
And they had the, you know, the sharpshooter at whatever, you know, the Gettysburg photograph that Gardner did.
Right.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yep.
It's like the sniper guy, like in his nest. Very famous Civil War photograph. And they had like an original albumen print. And I think they even had like the glass plate that it was made from there. I think they did. They had other ones there, but let's say that it was there just for the sake of argument. Why is it so cool that I'm there looking at that original glass plate? Why is that cooler than me looking at the print? And why is that albumen print from the period that he made even cooler than one that was made from a scan of the glass negative 30 years later, or, you know, 100 years later? You know what I mean?
Well, I think you're on to something about...
Is it that we like things with tangible something that it was there at that time? You know?
I think for the people that are of... our ilk, yes. I think there are some people that are going to be just happy to flip through a book and go, oh, yeah, that's great. But then there are other people that standing in front of this thing that has made its way in and out of
there's history
homes,
in the atoms,
museums, whatever. There's something it elevates it somehow,
right? That the history imbued in the atoms that are in the thing.
Yes,
right. Like playing with Gary Winogrand's camera, or when I saw that Karsh exhibit and they had his 8x10 there, you know.
Yeah. Or you know, you brought up David. You know, how many photographs have you seen of David? I mean, you know, it was one of the things you study in school. And then, but nothing, at least for me, nothing prepared me for standing at the foot of it.
Mostly for me with David is the size of it.
Yeah, it's enormous.
Yeah, it's really big. But let's say David was life size.
Mm-hmm.
Would it be as impressive, or is it the fact that it's 18 feet tall or whatever that makes it really cool?
I think it would be equally impressive life size, simply because much of the other sculpture, I only went to Florence, but much of the other sculpture that I saw was roughly life size, and I was equally impressed by it.
Okay. Yeah, it just got me thinking about the idea that like there is this original there, and I somehow give it more reverence because it's the original.
I think that's true.
Right.
You know, it's looking at photographs. It's, you know, what gets me to are the illuminated manuscripts.
Sure. Yeah.
That, you know, hand printed, hand painted, hand lettered. That, you know, that's a level of effort that boggles my mind. And then the fact that they have been preserved as well as they have, and I'm standing, you know, 5 millimeters of glass separates us.
Right. It's the same thing with like the stuff at the Air and Space Museum. It's like, you know, that's not just an airplane. That's the Wright Flyer. That is the original airplane.
Yeah.
And there it is sitting there. Or there's Apollo 11, you know.
Speaking of, I'm glad you brought up Apollo 11. As a little aside, what do you think of Bezos finding the engine?
You know, it's cool that he found the engine. I mean, it's, you know, he's somewhat lucky, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's somewhat lucky that it just happened to be one from Apollo 11. I mean, it's cool in the fact that he's spending his money to do something cool, and I'm a space nerd, and it's cool.
Yeah.
But eventually it'll probably just end up at some rich person's house, you know, pressing people in the front hallway, you know? I think that the things from, say, Apollo that people touched are more impressive to me than just a lot of gear, you know?
Like you would love to have a glove or something.
Yeah. Or, you know, I mean, even the command module, like going to see that at Air and Space is cool because it's like the actual people were in there doing it, you know? That stuff's cooler than, you know, a piece of gear that was using as testing equipment for something, you know.
One of the left turns early on was me working for a special effects company in LA, And one of the projects was building components for an air and space museum in Caracas, Venezuela. And we built a full-scale space shuttle nose with motion platform in it. And we built a full-scale LEM.
How'd they come out?
Really cool.
I gotta love making the LEM.
You could go up inside of it and everything, and there were little, you know, control panels and switches and dials.
You know, my sister introduced me to the chief registrar down the air and space, and I was like, anybody been in the LEM for a while? Because they have, you know, one of the original LEMs
that
was supposed to be for, I think, 19 or 18 that never flew. They have one there. I was like, and he's like, yeah, I think there have been people in there. I said, is it all like stripped out? He's like, no, I think it's actually pretty intact. I'm like, oh. Who do I have to have sex with to get in there? I don't care what I have to do. You know,
that's what we need. We need a selfie of Bill in the LEM.
Oh my God.
that would be your profile picture for everything.
I wouldn't mind dying after that. That would be pretty cool. And again, I guess, you know, I guess that's an artifact thing too, you know, but it's kind of cool. I mean, this, just to wrap this up, is it's interesting that we come full circle around to some of the stuff we talked about in some of our first episodes about printing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That there is something about the object, the artifact, and I think the closer the object / artifact gets to being imbued with the hand of the creator, the more meaningful it becomes to me.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, when I went and showed the Drabbles series back when I did it, you know, years ago to Greenfield Sanders, we were sitting at his kitchen table, and he's flipping through the book, and he's just like, you know, have you made prints of these? Like, you know, a series of prints. And I said, no, I haven't gotten around to it, whatever it is. He's like, you need to. He says, you need to go home, and you need to make prints. He goes, I don't care what size, you know, even 11 by 14. And... you know, print them out, sign them, date them, put them in a box, and put it on your shelf. He's like, because those are the original copies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are the official prints of this whole thing.
Right.
Like,
right.
And until you do that, your project's not done.
Yeah. There is something about, the object of things.
Yeah. And there's still a box in my closet that, you know, on the shelf that says Drabbles, you know, original prints signed and dated. You know?
See, that's great. That's like, cool. You know, that's the equivalent of, you know, a film reel.
Yeah, this is the master copy of the tape.
Right.
Yeah. Even though in some ways the master copy of the tape is actually the files on a computer. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like there's loss by printing. The original files have the most data. But yeah, no, it's just interesting. So anyway... print stuff out, because you never know, 50 years from now, MoMA might want to have it on the wall. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think so.
Anything else before we come up with our photographer of the week?
Wait, did you want to talk about the
light? No, apparently I don't want to talk about the light blaster, because you're very upset about it.
No, I think it's a fantastic thing.
You should
get one. No, you should get one.
Look, I'm not going to get one. I just thought it was kind of a neat idea.
Yeah, no, you should get one.
This company designed this thing that, like, you click a lens onto, and you stick a flash in the back, and you can put a slide in the middle, and you could project the slide onto the wall. So, you know, backgrounds or shapes or whatever it is, you can, like, blast them, project them with light with just a pop of the flash when you're taking flash photos. I think it's a neat idea.
Okay. You remember those things that, like, you see them at parties, and they have, like, the oil or fluid or something, and it reflect up on the walls?
No, we haven't had those since the 60s, so. Yeah. Go ahead. No, date yourself. Go ahead.
No, this is good. I'm gonna get one of these.
This is not the kind of thing that I'm actually going to go buy, but you know what? I think it's a neat idea. You know, it's a neat little tool. It's neater than a lot of the other. It's a lot neater than a lot of the other doodads people buy for photography. You know,
sure.
It's at least as neat as a lens baby. You know,
okay.
it's the same level of kind of kitschiness. Okay. I don't know. I think it's a neat idea.
No, you should get one.
They have like a backdrop kits and I like the wings effects. Did you see
those? Yeah.
You want some wings?
More than anything.
There's something wrong with you today. You know, we need to wrap this up because you're just going off the deep end.
Yeah.
Have you taken your pills this morning? All right.
That's good.
Who do you want to do for our photographer of the week?
Hey, you have an idea? You chose this. I didn't
choose this, actually. Somebody in the group chose this.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
From the Google Plus group?
Yeah. So,
who was it? You know?
I was just about to look it up while I was trying to get you to stall for a second. I will find it.
I know.
But yeah, somebody in the group suggested it. And
okay, while you're looking, it is.
It's actually Terry did.
Oh, okay.
Schmidbauer. Terry Schmidbauer.
Thank you, Terry. Philippe Halsman.
Yeah. Now, if you don't know the name, you should know the name, first of all. But if you don't know the name, you will know him by a very famous picture he did of Dali with cats getting thrown and water getting thrown through it. You all know this picture.
Right. Not a composite.
No. Done in one shot. In fact, my friend Chris Goldteeth did a recreation of it with Peter Yang a few years back.
Nice.
And a bunch of fantastic pictures of like Martin and Lewis.
Yep.
And things of Dali. I mean, this guy was a monster.
And probably the most beautiful photo of Elizabeth Taylor I've ever seen.
Yeah. You want to go there? You think so?
Stunning. Stunning.
You like the color one?
No, the black and white.
Oh, because there's color ones too. Wait, where's the black and white of Liz Taylor? I'll find it.
It's the same session. If you go to just the home, it's the second image that shows up. But yeah, the color one, also beautiful. Same session, same dress.
Beautiful,
gorgeous.
Beautiful stuff. Oh, yeah, no, that's a nice shot. You know, he took pictures of Einstein all the way up to like Woody Allen. This guy was around for years and years and years. What's interesting is that, you know, he's one of those guys who you know a lot of his pictures,
mm-hmm.
even if you don't know who he is. You're like, oh, that picture and that picture and that picture, you know.
Right.
There's that great picture of Hitchcock with the bird on his cigar.
Mm-hmm. There's one of Tippi Hedren with a bird, too. That's pretty cool.
It's funny. He liked the special effects in many ways, you know. The really wide-angle lenses,
right?
You know, that Platon likes to shoot with. This guy was playing it back then, you know,
mm-hmm.
Wasn't afraid to do really wide angle lenses or really long, lenses. It almost as if his equipment, was very much dictated by the shot, but to the point where he wasn't afraid of, like his photographs looked like each other because of the style, not because of the equipment.
Right.
And
okay.
I like that. Of him. Does that make sense?
On equipment for a second.
Sure.
Would this be probably hot lights, constant lights?
You know what? It's a good question. I mean, some of them, I don't think you could do that. You'd have to use strobes to do that Dali shot. Mm-hmm. A lot of them that he had up, I mean, this would have been like pretty early strobes. But I mean, he's got some really great pictures. It's funny. There's pictures of him shooting with Hasselblads. There's pictures of him shooting with, I think there's a Rolly in one of the pictures, with large format cameras, with like a, you know, like a Graflex kind of thing.
Mm-hmm,
this
mm-hmm.
guy obviously shot with whatever he had handy, you know? And I love that idea. I love the idea that it's people doing different stuff. You know what I mean?
Right. Right.
I mean, look, if you don't have a subject, do some self portraits. There's a whole section on his website of pictures of him. Have you seen that?
Yes.
They're great. A lot of them are like fantastic because, you know, you see him with cameras. There's the picture of Woody Allen that he took. You know, you can actually see the lights and the paper and how sort of low tech it all looks. I like that.
I love the shot. Is this him and his family? They're all looking down into
yeah.
Yeah, that's great. With the light behind
them. Twin lens reflexes, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of light right there, but that's like a lot of movie lights and stuff, you know? Much easier to do back in the days of black and white.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't have to worry about color temperature as much, you know? There's that weird picture of him with his head on a scale. You seen those?
Oh, yeah.
They're weird looking. Kind of...
I like that. You know, you point out the Woody Allen thing, how the low-tech-ness
yeah.
of it. And it's... Simple is good, right?
Simple is the way to go 9 times out of 10. You know? One softbox and some white paper. If you can't do something with a softbox and some white paper, then, you know, something wrong. The other day, I put up a picture on the... I think I put it up on the group of... a setup I did for this editorial shoot, and it literally was two umbrellas with speed lights shooting through them.
Oh, I saw that. You're like, this is all the gear I bring?
This is the complex setup that I bring. Yeah. And it really is. I mean, I don't, you know, there are times when I bring more than that, but, you know, I could fit two little stands, two umbrellas, two strobes, and, you know, my camera in like a little backpack and then my camera bag, you know?
Just a quick gear question.
Sure.
Do you use the umbrellas, because you're using shoot-throughs for that particular shot?
For that one I was, yeah.
In lieu of softboxes, why? Is it ease of setup and weight?
Yeah, they're smaller.
Okay. Yeah. And the light is going to be similar?
Yeah, I mean, close up, the light's going to be really similar. Shoot-through umbrellas especially kind of spread everywhere. Mm-hmm. And what I wanted was just really soft light from both sides. Because it was I was shooting an older woman, and so to minimize wrinkles and stuff, you can minimize shadows, and to minimize shadows, you soft light it sort of overall,
mm-hmm.
Or on camera axis, like over the camera, aiming down, that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
I did some shots with the two umbrellas on either side, and then I backed one of the umbrellas up a few feet so that it ended up sort of like a 2-to-1 ratio kind of thing going on.
Okay.
Versus like 1-to-1 when they were at the same distance, you know, just moving them back, not even changing the amount of light, just moving it back changes, you know, the ratios. And then I did a series of shots with that little 16-inch softbox that I like to use sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It worked out great.
When you move that umbrella back,
yeah.
Is that going to harden shadows?
I mean, yeah, but I mean, that's the fill side anyway, you know?
Okay.
And yes, theoretically it's, you know, you're further away, so the light's getting a little bit more directional, but not enough. I mean, I'm moving it 3 feet back. I'm not moving it across the room, you know?
Right. Can you put up any of the resulting shots, or are they kind of an NDA thing?
I can't do it yet. Okay. We'll do when I'm done. But she was happy, you know? And we were setting up in it was a hotel that she was staying at in Midtown East. And I get there and the editor lady had talked to the boss of the hotel just to ask if we could like set up in a corner, because I don't need a lot of space. And the guy apparently said, yes. Yeah. So we're looking around and we found like this conference room that looked like it was kind of empty. And I'm like, I'll just set up in here and no one will know. No one will be the wiser. And she leaves. And just as I'm setting up, like some guy comes out of the kitchen and she's like, hey, what are you doing here? And I explained. And then he brought his boss who went to talk to the boss. You know, and then in the end, he's like, so wait, who are you shooting? And I pull out my phone and look up the lady's name. And I tell him, he's like, oh, yeah, that's okay. And I'm like, you know, really?
Yeah.
What do you think? It's going to be another person shooting another person at exactly the same time in this little hotel. So anyway, yeah. So, I mean, a lot of times, though, if you ask permission and you're nice to people, like, you can get away with a lot of stuff, you know, especially if you get the boss, right? Because no one wants to put their head on the line. But if it's like the general manager, you know. If you ask nicely, a lot of times things can work out. But, you know, it's not ideal, but, you know, you're working in a big empty room with ugly walls, you know?
Right.
So take the walls out of the equation, you know? Pull away from the walls so that the background goes darker, you know? Or go find the darker wall and use a single light that's smaller so you end up getting sort of like a splash of light. Not smooth where you see the whole wall, but you're getting like a circle of light on the person, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Use a
mm-hmm.
wider lens, back up a little bit. So there's things you can do, you know? Yeah, anyway, it was fun. But the point of it was that you don't need a lot of stuff. And yeah. It doesn't seem like Halsman was using a whole lot of stuff either.
One of the other things beyond the images, I love some of the quotes that are on his website. On the the one of the pages, some of my colleagues think I damage my reputation as a serious photographer by publishing, quote, silly and tricky, end quote, manipulated photographs like the ones I did of Dolly, which mostly expressed abstract ideas. I believe they are wrong.
I believe they are wrong. I like the picture of Jackie Gleason jumping up in the air, because you don't generally think of Jackie Gleason jumping up in the air all that much.
Right. Yeah, no, there's some good ones in that series.
Yeah, there's a lot of good ones in that jumping series.
The one of Marie Chevalier is pretty awesome, too.
I mean, I thought that all the kids in Brooklyn were the first people to make things that had people jumping up in the air like that. Actually, my favorite in that whole series is the last one with the Duke and Duchess of Windsor jumping up in the air.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, how do you get them to do that?
Yeah.
You know, or Nixon jumping up in the air. Like, he's got people you wouldn't expect to be able to get up in the air, jumping up in the air, you know?
Yeah, that's great. Oppenheimer? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's look at genius. That. Oppenheimer up in the air. I do. The one of Martin and Lewis, that was amazing, where they're, like, slamming into each other in the middle of the air.
Yeah.
Those guys crack me up. Anyway.
No, President Nixon, what I'd like you to do is just jump up in the air, please.
I won't do it. I just won't. I am not a jumper.
All right, Jeffrey, if somebody wanted to find the show notes to get links to, say, the Philippe Halsman or any of the rest of the stuff we were talking about today, like the imposter syndrome or why you shouldn't care that Picasso was destroyed or the link to the light blaster, suck it.
You know,
where would they go?
You know, what you want to do is you want to surf yourself over to 5x5.
Okay.
The fine folks at 5x5. So it's 5x5.tv/OTP, get you to the main page for the show. Add a /65 to that, and that will get you to the show notes for this particular episode.
And if people wanted to get a hold of us, how do they do that?
podcast@ontakingpictures.com. You okay. can get us there. You can leave a message on the Google Plus group, or you can tweet us. Bill tweets at Bill Wadman. I tweet at Jeffrey Sidoris. You can
Wait, you get our email already?
Email, yeah, podcast@ontakingpictures.
Okay. Is the Google Plus group the Google Plus group that you and I are going to start putting a picture a day up?
That's the one.
I think can you do hashtags or anything on Google Plus?
We could.
You know what we could do? Can we create a new?
Let's just create a new folder, like call it Pod. You know, Picture O Day or something.
Okay. Okay.
And anybody that wants to jump in there and participate, let's do this together.
All right. Yeah. In fact, you know what? I'm going to do it right now.
Or picture of the day. Set up something. I don't know. What are you going to call it so people know?
Daily project.
Okay.
Daily. Fine. Daily photo bucket.
Daily, really? Daily photo bucket.
Okay. One a day. Vitamins.
Vitamins. Yeah, we'll get sued for that.
How about pressure, Jeffrey?
Or, no, not that. you know what? Let's just. What about photo challenge?
Okay, that's good one.
Because that covers all manner of things that we can
okay.
add.
Okay, photo challenge. It exists
photo challenge,
as we speak.
Yeah, add some stuff. Hey, one little final aside.
Yep.
One of my favorite television programs ever, Carl Sagan's Cosmos, is being rebooted by your friend Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Your friend and mine, Neil deGrasse Tyson.
In 2014, it's being called Cosmos, A Space-Time Odyssey. And they are rebooting the series. One of the things that's really neat is Carl's widow, Andrian, she's involved. She is involved with the new reboot. She's producing it. So
I want to take her picture. You think I can make that happen?
I think that would be fantastic. Yeah,
I'm gonna see if I can get a hold of her and make that happen.
Love that series. It was given to me by my freshman English teacher. She gave me the VHS 13 VHS tapes of each episode.
They are amazing. Oh, yeah. Hey, one other thing. You know, I'm going to start it today on MailChimp. We're going to start doing the show notes on MailChimp, and I'll put a link on the just because everyone wants to get them. It'll be easier to get to them. You know
I think
I mean?
That's a good idea. Yeah. Yeah.
And so I'll do it Wow, that's a terrible picture of Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Yeah, it's very flary.
Ooh, that's terrible. That's like, that is what happens when you take pictures on a cell phone. So I'm going to set up a MailChimp account and let people sign up, and then we'll be able to send out our show notes so that you don't have to go look for them. They come to you.
That's a good idea.
Okay. Till next week, go take some pictures. One a day.
Yes.
Come on, let's do it.
All right. Yeah, let's do it. I'm in.
All right.
See all right. Later. Have a good week, everyone.
Bye. Going on and on the way we are for so long. To any fool, it's plain to see something's wrong. As this way, say what you want to say. Try to